underneath of each of that. Alright, just a couple of housekeeping matters. I've received a letter from the president of the SCA. He is outraged. You will recall Mr. Johnson's comments about the budget of the Supreme Court of Appeal and the fact that it had been underspent. And at the time, you'll recall, I warned Mr. Johnson that he had now opened hornet's nest. So, I'm going to, with your permission, refer this letter to the Director General, Sindane, asking her to try and resolve the matter as amicably as possible. So that's the first thing. The second thing, you will have seen, honourable members, in the media, the passing on of Dr. Bye, Dr. Gladstone Sandy Bye, a human rights commissioner in our South African Human Rights Commission. We've held some informal discussions with members of the opposition parties with a view to having a condolence motion moved in the National Assembly early next week. We don't want to do it this week because this week's events will overtake that motion and it will enjoy absolutely no coverage in the media. I'm informed confidentially or reliably by Mr. Romano that Dr. Bye will be interned at a funeral in the Eastern Cape on Thursday. It's the day after tomorrow. So I'm not sure if any of you are able to attend. And that's as far as that's concerned. I have also received a letter from someone in the Office of the Public Protector. It's a very lengthy letter, making all manner of allegations. It's not signed, so I'm not sure how we should deal with that aspect of it. Harassment, sexual harassment, and bullying. And maladministration. So, at some point, I will have this distributed amongst you so that you can read it, and then we'll need to decide how best we can deal with it. We are charged with conducting oversight of the Office of the Public Protector, and so it's in keeping with our mandate. Now, as to the matters of magistrates that's before us, we have before us, if you, lady and gentlemen, can introduce yourselves. We know who you are, but just for the record.
Thank you, Honourable. My name is Hans Meyer. I'm a magistrate. Establishment of the Magistrates Commission, and we are very lucky to have appointed two other members.
You are close to you.
Thank you. So we have at least 100% increase in the work capacity. Ms. Victoria is next to me. She's a senior magistrate at Brits, and she's been seconded for a term of 3 years to assist us. As well as Ms. Lebesi, she is unfortunately, due to other commitments in Natal, not able to attend this committee meeting. But these two ladies are assisting us in a great extent. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson. As my colleague, Sigal Pretoria, Senior Magistrate, and I'm now the baby at the office, started there on the 2nd of May this year. Thank you so much.
Good morning, Honourable Chair. I'm Andre Lowe. I'm also with the Ethics Division of the Magistrates Commission.
All right. Welcome to all of you. Okay, we will receive the briefing from you and then take it from there. I don't know who wants to kick off, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Chairperson. I believe there are four progress reports, all in respect of additional suspension from office of four magistrates, Mr. Dumani, Masinga, Murak, and Rambau. If I can start off with Mr. Dumani, you will report, Chairperson, that Mr. Dumani was found guilty of misconduct. The presiding officer recommended his removal from office. In terms of section 13.4A1 of the Act, which was endorsed by the Commission, the Minister was in the process of suspending him from office when he filed an urgent application in the High Court restraining and interdicting the Minister to take any further disciplinary action against him, pending another application in which he wants to review the decision by the facade officer and the commission rather to have him suspended and removed from office. That review application was dismissed with costs. He requested or he petitioned or sorry rather he applied for a leave to appeal, which was also turned down, and he petitioned to the Supreme Court of Appeal, which petition was granted, and he was granted leave to appeal.
Thank you.
To the Supreme Court, we have just been informed that a date for the appeal might be set at the end of next month, beginning of October. In the meanwhile, he has been suspended from, well, he's not been suspended in office, but the Commission was not prohibited to determine to withhold his remuneration, which was already endorsed by this committee as well. So he's not getting paid, and he's still provisionally suspended. We're just waiting for the outcome of the matter on appeal.
Mr. Masinga appeared in the Durban Magistrates Court on the charge of contravening Section 17A of the Domestic Violence Act. It is alleged that he assaulted his wife with a blunt axe, that he kicked her, hit her with open hands, and threatened to kill her. He also assaulted his daughters. The criminal proceedings were initially remanded. I have heard the whole process of how the remands took place and the reasons therefore. I can take you through, Mr. Chair. It is for many months this has been going on. Then he has legal representation, and then he there were all sorts of reasons. In any event, these reasons go on until in this report until the 22nd to the 24th of March 2012. I will just add additional to the report before you the other reasons where we are now. From the 22nd or the 24th of March, Mr. Honourable Chair, I don't know if you want me to until the 24th of March, do you want to go through all the reasons indicated in the report, or if that will be okay, then I'll just put in the additional.
Additional, please.
On the 20th of April, Mr. Masinga presents a letter from an attorney. His attorney was not available and would only be available in June 2012. Then the inquiry was postponed to the 26th and 27th of June. Our witnesses were present. Mr. Masinga's new attorney, Mr. Mashenga, was only appointed the previous day then. And on 26th June 2012, Mr. Mashenga, his attorney, appeared. There was an application for recusal of the presiding officer. That was heard, and the application for recusal was dismissed. And on 27 June, that was now from the previous day, evidence of witness, the first witness, the complainant, was the wife of the accused magistrate, Gugu Masinga. The wife was Francis Masinga, but the witnesses were led. And then it was postponed to the 23rd and 24th for cross-examination, July 2012, 23 and 24. On 23, Mr. Masinga and his attorney, as well as the witnesses, were present. Then the attorney requested an inspection in loco. We went to the place where the incident took place, and then there was the matter was then heard further, and it was postponed to the following day, because there was also now a matter of the statement made by the complainant, whether it was made free, voluntary, and without any undue influence. The police officer, the captain who took the statement, he was then called, and he had to testify. He testified on how the statement was made, and then the matter was then postponed. The decision on whether the statement was made voluntary and so on, that decision is kept over in abeyance until later in the case. So no ruling has been made. The matter was then postponed to the 3rd of August for judgment on whether the statement was made voluntary, and then on that date it was decided, the presiding officer decided to keep it over. Matter was further postponed to the 13th and 14th of August for further cross-examination. And then on the 13th of August, cross-examination continues. On the 14th, the cross-examination continues, and it was postponed to the 17th of August. Then cross-examination still continued, and on the 1st and the 2nd of October, cross-examination continued. That is only the one witness, and that is being cross-examined, that will be going on for the 5th day. That is where we are now, Mr. Chair. It is an ongoing process.
Sure. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lowe.
Chairperson, the next matter is then Mr. Muraki. Mr. Muraki was found guilty of 2 counts of theft, and he was sentenced to 4 years imprisonment. He took that decision, however, on appeal, and that appeal is still pending. The Ethics Committee, in the meantime, resolved to proceed with the misconduct inquiry against him. He, at the misconduct inquiry, argued again before the presiding officer to have the matter postponed pending the outcome of the matter on appeal. The presiding officer then ordered, after having heard arguments on both sides, the disciplinary hearing to proceed. There are several charges leveled against Mr. Muraki. The misconduct inquiry for he appointed a legal representative, who withdrew again. He's got a new legal representative, and he intends to be senior counsel. That was the last put a place on record, but the matter stand out postponed for next week, Tuesday and Wednesday. We are ready to proceed with the trial. The witnesses have been requested to be there, subpoena to be there. So we, from the commission side, are ready to proceed with the misconduct inquiry, and we will vigorously oppose any further postponements.
Okay, let's hold comments and questions until they've done all the progress reports. One more, Mr.
Yes, Chairperson, thank you. Then Mr. Rambeau. We've already commenced with that inquiry. He was, the last time he was taken, he sent a medical certificate. His criminal trial is still pending. We've already commenced with the misconduct inquiry. But the last time, on the 20th of June 2011, counsel appeared on behalf of Mr. Rambeau at the misconduct inquiry. No further particulars were requested from the commission at that stage, and they requested a postponement pending finalization of the criminal matter. They indicated the criminal case would likely be concluded in October 2011, and then the presiding officer granted them the postponement. Chair, and then after they requested disclosure and discovery of all the documents and statements which were submitted to them. Then at that next day of the trial, neither Mr. Rambeau nor his counsel were present. He submitted a medical certificate indicating that he was unfit for work due to diabetes mellitus. We have been trying to get hold of his counsel and advocate. We can't directly approach Mr. Rambeau. We have, we need to speak to his council, and a date is still to be determined. Chairperson, we have to go to Polokwane to physically go and approach the advocate in chambers to set a date. Now and he's suspended from office, but not without remuneration. He's delaying this matter. We have requested the ethics committee to determine to withhold, or to rather to recommend to the commission to determine to withhold remuneration, which they turned down because he was not convicted as yet. But I know this matter is long overdue, and we need to commence with the inquiry and start hearing the evidence. It's very tricky, although.
All right. Schaefer.
Goodness. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say I think we need to welcome the extra assistance that the ethics magistrates have. I know they've been battling for a long time under a huge amount of work, and I think they've done exceptionally well, and congratulations on that. And we really have to have a 100% increase in your numbers. I also want to welcome the decision in the previous matter. As you know, we have taken up this issue for quite some time as to why the Commission continues to postpone matters pending the outcome of other matters in court. And I think it's a huge step forward that in the previous matter it has now been refused, so magistrates can stop using delaying tactics to avoid misconduct hearings. They aren't relevant anyway. I'm just a little concerned about this issue. I mean, why can you not deal with this issue by sending an email or a letter or whatever to the advocate? Why do you have to physically go and see? If he's not contacting you, then set a date and say that's when it's going to happen. And if he's not available, then Mr. Rambeau must find somebody else.
Let's hear Prof. Ndaba.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Mine is a typographical error under withholding of remuneration. This is withholding. It should be withholding. Thanks, Chair.
All right.
Thank you, Jefferson.
All right. Any other questions and comments? Ms. Kana Pilani-Majak.
Thank you, Chair. I just want clarity in terms of who is suspended on salary, who's not suspended on salary.
Any more questions and comments? No? All right. Mr. Mayor and your team.
Thank you, Jefferson. Mr. Dumani, Masina and Meraki are all provisionally suspended without remuneration. It's only Mr. Rambeau. To respond to Honourable Member Jefferson, it's difficult that the attorney, or the advocate rather, didn't give me any details. He only gave me a contact number. He doesn't want to give me his visitor's card. I don't have any particulars of him. I have to approach the bar.
Yes, do that.
To get hold of him.
Yes. Yes, write a formal letter to the bar and give Ms. Schaefer a copy of that letter so that we can make it public.
Because he says he's always busy with murder cases. Available.
Yes.
And that's the delay.
Yes.
We'll do that, Shepard. May I just, with your permission, Chair, the process in the criminal trial is such, you will recall that he was one of three, the prosecutor, he as the presiding officer, and the attorney for the accused, took a bribe for a pre-sentence. To have a sentence set, which was predetermined by both three of them. The state's case has been finalized and concluded. They requested for dismissal in terms of Section 174 of the Criminal Procedure Act, which was not granted. So they are on the defense now. The attorney has been struck from the role, as I've been informed, but he's now a captain in the army. He requested now the court to be assisted by legal aid, which was turned down by the legal aid board because he's getting an remuneration, which is now taking on appeal.
Oh.
So the matter is set down for hearing for next week, but most probably that appeal has to be dealt with before
the presiding officer, and I don't think they will continue to proceed with the trial. So there's another postponement again in the criminal matter.
All right. Well, I'm sure there are people who will learn from this, and I'm talking about how to delay matters. Exactly. All right. Should we move on, honourable members?
Please.
All right, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Chair Person. Then we have three further reports in terms of section 13.4. A1, the suspension removal of three magistrates, two which are on account of misconduct, and the last one, Ms. Miles, is in on account of continued ill-health. Ms. Pretorius will kick off with Ms. Ndamazi.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I present the letter of Mrs. Ndelekan Damasi, Additional Magistrate at Pretoria Magistrate's Office. Today she has the total of plus minus 23 years service in the Department of Justice. She's got it in the old Transkei. She was convicted on the 17th of April this year on 11 counts of misconduct. 8 counts relate to refusal to execute lawful orders, and in 3 counts failing to execute her official duties objectively, competently, and with dignity, courtesy, and self-control. She was initially charged with 42 counts of misconduct. At the closure of the Commission's case, she was discharged on some of the matters. I think, if I remember correctly, 27 counts then remained. The reason for the high rate of discharge was one of the key witnesses, Mrs. Annette Rodeman, Senior Magistrate at Pretoria Magistrate's Office, took early retirement due to ill health, and she had various illnesses. One of them was stress-related, and she was just, the doctor didn't recommend that she was subjected to the disciplinary inquiry, so that's why some of the counts filed. Ms. Ndamazi Nikon has been suspended from office. The Honourable Minister signed it on the 30th of July this year. It was tabled in Parliament on the 2nd of August this year. So this is now a motion to have removed from office in terms of Section 13 of the Act. I can just say it was a very lengthy trial. It took over a year to start the trial. Also, for sake of all due respect, various delaying tactics, legal representation, getting financial legal assistance from the department, which was refused because it's only allowed in civil matters, not in disciplinary inquiries. Then an attorney was appointed. The attorney had to write exams. It was postponed a couple of times after the attorney, and then when we were finally ready to start the trial, the attorney in the picture was reported to the Law Society, and she was reprimanded by the Law Society. The reason why she didn't want the trial, she realized that one of the witnesses in the disciplinary inquiry on behalf of the Commission was somebody she had an action against. It was also an attorney, as a matter of fact. But after the year, we eventually started with the trial. It took more than a year to finalize the trial, also for various reasons. Various attorneys testified in the matter, and obviously all of them have busy schedules, and we tried to accommodate all of these people. Some of the attorneys are not local anymore. They were, for example, in Natal. The chief magistrate testified a couple of days in this matter, some of the senior magistrates, etc. But be it as it may, she wasn't convicted. No evidence was presented before the sentence motion. Both parties addressed the chairperson or the presiding officer, and then important to note that the presiding officer found the following to be aggravating factors in the matter. Mrs. Ndamazi shows total disrespect towards the judicial head of office, and I also mention at this stage there's a total complete breakdown of any form of communication between the two parties to such an extent which came out in the evidence. She refuses to speak to him, and she also refuses to receive any written correspondence from the chief magistrate, which for obvious reasons make it virtually, well, totally impossible to manage it judicially effectively. She was found guilty of 8 counts of misconduct, where she refused to execute lawful orders from a judicial head of office. The other 3 counts relate to failure to execute her official duties objectively, competently, and with dignity, courtesy, and self-control. I can just mention, for example, one of the counts in which she was convicted is the secretary of the chief magistrate had to deliver a letter from the chief magistrate to Mrs. Ndamazi. This poor lady was newly appointed. I think she was less than a week in the service of the department, and Mrs. Ndamazi then shot it at her and threw the letter back at her, which the lady found extremely traumatizing. Point four, Mrs. Namasi is very difficult to work with. She refuses to receive any written communication from a judicial head of office. She has no respect for supervisors, and this includes the senior magistrates as well. She refused to report for duty to work in the criminal section because most of the complaints came from the civil section from the attorneys, and then the head of office tried to resolve the issue by shifting it to another section in the office. She blatantly refused after various oral and twice, I think she was in writing order to do so. Behavior inside and outside the court from time to time lacks dignity, courtesy and self-control, which is not in the interest of justice. Mrs. Namasi was not a reliable witness. I can also just maybe enlighten you. It was put during various stages of the trial that she would deliberately mislead witnesses, put matters as a fact to the witnesses, which then obviously was objected to and pointed out that's not the way it was set, even when we had written correspondence to effect to support that. Point nine, her disrespect for seniors impacts negatively on the management of the Pretoria Magistrate Office. I could just maybe also just inform you here, for example, when she was now moved to the civil section, to the criminal section, she would utilize the civil section statistics forms to write now her criminal statistics. And obviously it makes it completely impossible to consolidate the civil section and then ultimately to consolidate all feeder sections. And I'm sure you all know the importance of the statistics, their deadlines had to be submitted. She kept on for a couple of months to this extent, just I think basically to be spiteful and to frustrate the management of the office. It's impossible to work in the community quite sensibly with Mrs. Namasi. She wants to work on her own terms and conditions in the office. This happens the proper management of the office, which is not in the interest of justice. Point 12. Mrs. Namasi does not care what she says and whom she says it. This is always not in the interest of justice. Point 13. She refuses to accept that she had some shortcomings in the civil section. She blatantly refused to accept further mentoring in this regard. We can just also inform this forum as well. At all relevant times, the chief magistrate and the relevant senior magistrates really adhered to the RDL's also bottom rule. At all times, she was afforded the opportunity to give a response, but it ended up in the end of the day that she blatantly refused. She didn't want to accept any communication from the office of the chief magistrate. Mrs. Namasi lacks introspection as where she is at fault. Mrs. Namasi does not show remorse. She still does not accept any rulings made by the presiding officer during the trial. We also weighed up the mitigating factors, which I'd like to bring under your attention. The period from 2008 to the date of finalization of the hearing was stressful for Mrs. Namasi, but also put this in perspective, which she also said during the same procedure, a lot of the stress that was upon her was brought upon us by herself because of her attitude and her actions in the office. She did experience some health problems, he mentioned that. Point three, she lost her daughter prior to being charged with misconduct, which obviously had a traumatic experience for her. Point four, she has approximately 23 years of service, of which she's 14 to 15 years as a magistrate. Currently she's 58 years old, has one child of her own, an adult child, is about the age of 18, and she's also involved with two other children, one and a children's home, which she voluntary support, but there's no legal obligation for her to maintain these children. She's divorced and a single parent. He also took into consideration a neutral factor. And I can also just maybe mention to you, more than 2 weeks prior to the judgment in this matter, another two complaints was lodged with the Magistrates Commission. One was a racial incident where Mrs. Namasi in the Hatfield from the bench in her own criminal court made racial slurs. And in the second complaint where she spoke allegedly in Chitosa to the attorney's client, the attorney said, I do not understand the language you're speaking, and please utilize an interpreter. She patently refused that, and she had her own conversation with the accused person. So the attorney doesn't know what transpired between her client and the magistrate. So those incidents are being currently investigated in terms of Regulation 26, and I hope to get a report by the end of this month, but that was not taken into consideration. It's just a little factor to consider. Mrs. Namasi was given the opportunity to reply to the judgment of the presiding officer. She did so. She presented a lengthy document. In brief, it was basically a repetition of the issues she raised during the trial. The presiding officer replied back to that in terms of Regulation 26-21, if I'm not correct. And as I said, that's the situation where we sit there. Also, I've almost had 25 years experience in the legal field. the judgment of the presiding officer consists of 209 pages. It was a quite tough judgment, which he read into record. It is a very comprehensive judgment, and he really leaned backwards to take into consideration all factors. It's a very objective judgment. So then this is a motion then for removal of office from Ms. Damasio. Thank you so much, Jefferson.
Just so that maybe I should have provided you with a copy of this document which we have. Magistrate in Damasio has given notice to the minister, and this has been forwarded to us, of her intention to apply to the High Court for a review of the decision.
We are aware of that, the Commission, sir, but obviously an intention to do so is not really doing the case. I can just maybe enlighten you as well. From the onset when we started with the disciplinary inquiry, even before we started reading evidence, that was the whole time what she was trying to convey. She wants to take the matter on review, and she was trying to take action in terms of the PIA Act. The presiding officer did rule on our PIA Act. She was completely out of time. She had more than ample time to do that. And obviously that's a constitutional right, but as I say, what we must take into consideration, a threat to take a matter to the High Court is not the actual institution of the matter. To date, the Commission has not received a notice of motion. Thank you, Chairperson.
Fair enough. This is dated 14th August, by the way. All right. And, okay, Ms. Schaefer, and then Mr. J.P. Sivanyoi.
Thanks. I just want to ask, she also written a letter to the Minister of Justice. From what I can see, there's no question about the fact that you've done your process very thoroughly, but I just want to ask you, she said she's not been furnished with any reasons to the effect as to why she should be removed from office. What is your normal process in that regard?
There are no reasons, because she was there during the judgment. So what I've not tabled here, what was weighed out, the aggravating circumstances, mitigating, she was there. But there's no provision for any other further reasons. She had the opportunity to respond in writing to the judgment, which she did, and in the presiding office in terms of Regulation 26 sub 21 responded again to that. But I can just also say this has been the attitude she had during the whole inquiry, always saying that she wasn't given notice, it's not yet, but at all due times due process were followed completely.
The question really is, if it were taken on review, you're quite confident that it would be successful for the department?
Yes, and as I say, it's a 209-page judgment in my almost 25 years in the legal field. It's one of the best judgments I've seen. It was very well considered. All facts were taken into consideration. I can also just say, and you also see it in his judgment, that the presiding officer actually leaned very much backwards to be, I also want to say, overly fair towards Ms. Damasio, because he took in consideration the background at the Royal Magistrate Office.
Mr. J.B. Sonioni. Yeah. Your mic, please, Mr. Sigoni.
I just want to find out. I'm going through the letters that Magistrate Damasio writes, and then I see there is a letter where she speaks about the manner of victimization imposed on me for years. And then, among others, seems to be complaining about the use of Afrikaans. Now the Pretoria Court being the area where predominantly I would say maybe attorneys are speaking Afrikaans and maybe magistrates are speaking Afrikaans. To what extent did that be a shortcoming on her part, more especially maybe when she was requested to go and preside in a civil court? Was it not maybe a shortcoming, something that prejudiced her? And also, maybe to end my question, by her using isiXhosa, was it not a form of a protest to say isiXhosa is one of the official languages? Why am I not supposed to use isiXhosa if people around here are using Afrikaans as one of the official languages of the country?
All due respect, we must not cloud the issues and be able to see the woods for the trees. The isiXhosa issue is the issue after this. It's not relevant and not related to that. And at this stage, without it's not so much inviting the official languages of the courts at this stage are either Afrikaans or English, and then we make use of translators, interpreters, so that everybody can speak in their own language. But it's expected from the presiding officer to either speak English or Afrikaans, and it's normally the habit, if the magistrate is going to speak English, then everybody follows English, but for the accused and the witness, witnesses, you would use the language of reference, the so-called home language. So the issue clause issue regarding the Hatfield Court, it's not relevant to this matter, and just taking consideration what the policy of the government is at the stage plotting using of that. As far as the Afrikaans language is, I specifically cross-examined Ms. Cynthia Marsh on this issue, and it was her point of view. The fact that she wasn't fluent in Afrikaans was not a drawback for her to work in the civil section. And that was not the gist of the complaint. There were complaints that she sent matters back to her colleagues because either the papers were drawn Afrikaans in the civil section. But if you bear in mind, when it comes to the actual talking in the court, either the attorneys utilized freelance interpreters, and when Mr. Naif assumed duty as chief magistrate, official Department of Justice interpreters were pointed to the civil courts as such. But I'm speaking up purely from her point of view. I really did cross-examine a number of times on this issue. She was very adamant that the Afrikaans situation was not a drawback for that. And that's not the reason that she was convicted on any of the misconduct charges. They were not related to Afrikaans issues. It were other issues regarding her competency, regarding, for example, failure to give the false judgments, not understanding the National Credit Act, in which I can also add, the presiding officer also leaned back to say that there were a lot of judicial officers in that country because it was such a tricky part of a piece of legislation who didn't understand that. So certainly, and I hope that answers your questions. Afrikaans and the issue clause are not related to the issues at this edge.
Follow up, Mr. Simonu.
I understand you correctly say the Department of Justice provides interpreters even in civil matters, not only in criminal matters.
Not at all. Previously, let's say up to more or less 2006, some of the civil courts did have a habit. They didn't use official Department of Justice interpreters. The attorneys brought their own freelance interpreters. Because you must bear in mind, civil litigation is more paperwork. So the magistrate sits in office and you read the documentation. So it's not like a criminal case where you come blind and you for the first time hear the facts. You more or less have an idea what's happening. But obviously now, if you are not fluent in Afrikaans and you have a thick bundle of documentation in Afrikaans, it is going to be difficult. And it's going to be difficult to sit a hole with an interpreter to translate all of that. So maybe you have a drawback. It's like, for example, me. I can't, for example, go work Israeli child where you have a so-called ethnic court where everybody's going to speak is it closer because I'm not fluent in that. So I can't apply for that job because I'm not equipped to do the job, if you try to understand what I'm trying to say. But when it comes to the actual court matters, when people are talking, when evidence is being heard, it's done by interpreters. Obviously, you get some people who doubt it's not their home language. For example, you might be Isikoda, but you've learned in English, so you are willing and prepared to testify English. But even the presiding officer see that although you might think you're fluent in English, but not going so well, then the presiding officer would stop the proceedings and say, okay, let's get Isikoda interpreter. But for all courts, there are provision for official interpreters.
First, hang on, Mr. Jeffrey, Pilani Majake, and then Prof. Ndabendaba.
Apologies for coming late, I hope my apologies were given.
Yes.
Just trying to understand the process. You had the disciplinary hearing, which concluded on the 2nd of May, as far as sentencing. Then she had the opportunity to make representations, which she did. That was on the 12th of May. And then the presiding officer responded on the 17th of May. And that all went to the commission.
Yes, okay. That's correct.
Now, where is the commission's... did the commission inform Mrs. Lamase?
About what, sir?
About their decision. And where is that letter?
You must just explain to me what decision now, because there's a lot of processes following. Which one are you referring to now?
Look, the process is basically a disciplinary hearing, right? Then it goes to the commission to take a decision.
We do disciplinary inquiry or the hearing, as you say. The magistrate at all relevant times in this particular instance was present. You heard the judgment, she heard the sentence. As you now mentioned, she had an opportunity to respond to the recommendation, and that's for the removal from office, which she did. Then the presiding officer had an opportunity to respond to that, and that's the end of the road.
No. The issue is who decides that she's going to be removed, the commission.
Right. What happens in this, can I just explain, in this particular instance, on the 6th of June, the ethics committee.
Yeah.
It was presented to the ethics committee. They agreed with the recommendation of the presiding officer, and then on the 21st of July this year, the commission sat, the full commission, and they also approved
the documentation regarding that. All I've got is a letter from the commission to the minister. dated 23rd of July. I mean, basically the hearing is the first part of it, as you correctly said, okay? And that's all clear, and all the arguments are set out there. But then the parties are given an opportunity to make input. That input is then considered. You say it's considered first by the Ethics Committee, then by the Commission. But when Mrs. Ndamase says, I have not been given the reasons, did she receive any letter from the Commission, and where is that letter, informing her of the Commission's decision? And even if the Commission were to say, we agree with the decision of the disciplinary hearing, that's fine, that's a reason. But did she get that? So can you please show me the letter to Mrs. from the Commission to Mrs. Ndamase? All we've got is the letter from the Commission to the Minister.
Chairperson, may I just assist? A letter was drafted and submitted to Mr. Ndamase on the 15th of August 2012.
15th August.
15th of August, Chairperson.
The day after she writes this letter to the Minister complaining she never got reasons.
We didn't receive that letter, Chairperson, as far as I'm concerned. But
well, if anyone looking at it looks like you responded, why do you, you know, the Commission writes to the Minister on the 23rd of July. Why don't they write on the 23rd of July to Mrs. Ndamase?
Chair, we do have a letter here dated the 14th of August 2012, addressed to the Secretary of the Commission from Mrs. Ndamase, which was then responded to on the 15th of August by the Secretary of the Commission.
Now, what I want to know is, you have this disciplinary hearing, you have the long reports and things. It goes to, she's able to make representations, so she's putting forward an alternative case on the sentencing. Where is the response to her?
With all due respect, the Magistrates Act and the regulation doesn't make provision for a further process. That is how Regulation 26 operates. After the recommendation or the sentence recommendation, the concerned party then can respond to that, and then the presiding officer, and then it just goes through the channels. I'm not aware of the regulations making a process, and I mean, she knows what the reasons was, why the recommendation was made.
We hear that.
Well, look, with all due respect, I mean, you know, let me turn it back on you. I mean, you have the hearing process. You then say to the party, in terms of the regulations, you will know the regulations, I don't know, but it's 2620, just looking at the thing, at the submission, that you can make submissions. Now, presumably you make those submissions with the expectation that somebody is going to consider them. Am I correct? Yes, no, yes or no?
I'm trying to explain, we must consider it. It's for the eyes and for the attention of the presiding officer to the disciplinary inquiry.
Okay, and the presiding officer then has a response. Okay. Now, is this not all forwarded? Did the Ethics Committee not consider these representations, both of them? This is in the masses and the presiding officers. Of course they did. They did. Okay. So they had to apply their minds, right? Where's the record of their decision? And they then make a recommendation to the full commission, who also apply their mind. Where is the record of their decision? Where is the letter to Mrs. Ndamase?
From the commission.
From commission, who is body who are then recommending her removal. Mrs. Ndamase says on the 14th of August, I'm informed, I received of your letter dated the 8th of August. That seems to be a letter from the minister. She's writing to the minister. In which I am informed of the recommendation from the magistrate's commission that I be removed from office. Now, I don't know have we got a copy of the letter of this of 8th of August? I have not been furnished with any reasons to the effect, as this is my constitutional right, and I've written to the commission about this, and that's a letter of the 14th. But I think, you know, what my worry is that it's all very well to say, well, the reasons are set out in the judgment, both the reasons for the finding of guilt and the reasons for the sentencing. But given that the judgment is not the end of the process, and it is still to be looked at by two other bodies, surely Mrs. Ndamase is entitled to a decision with reasons. And the reason can be a one-liner of, we reject the representations of Mrs. Ndamase, and we accept the representations of the presiding officer. Who's that? Surely that would be enough. That is. D.C. van Grenen. But you know, I think she's entitled to that, because other minds have to be applied. And I think that is basic.
Part of the ancient received that.
Sorry? No, but you see, my difficulty is, Debbie, is that, you know, why, surely from, you're on the commission, you have the hearing right, you have the judgment, you all hear it. If that's at the end of the process, that's fine. But you then give an opportunity in terms of Regulation 26 for further representations from the, whatever you'd call them, the accused, and from the presiding officer. Somebody, and I would understand it's the Ethics Committee and then your commission, Ms. Schaefer, look at it and apply their mind. Surely, she should then be informed of that decision.
Of the commission.
When? Of the commission.
On the 15th of August.
On the 15th of August. But the decision, that was an afterthought after she wrote to them and complained on the 14th of August.
But the fact matter, she's now got it. So what's the issue?
Well, it doesn't look very good. Why does the commission write to the minister on the 23rd of July saying, this is our report, this is what we recommend? Why can't they have the decency to write and inform her at the same time?
Fair enough. But I just also want to remind you that the MPs recuse ourselves from the discussions on the commission because you don't
accept that.
Okay, let's make all right. Yes, but with all due respect, we're not sitting with a legal life person. During the course of the trial, she was informed and she was aware that this.
With all due respect, okay.
I just finished the.
Well, I don't really like. I mean, it's nothing to do with what happened in the hearing. I don't have a problem with what happened in the hearing. I have a problem with what happened afterwards. And with all due respect, can you please address me on that point, or address the committee on that point? Why did you not bother to inform Mrs. Ndamase the moment that the Magistrates Commission took the decision of its decision, plus its reason, which was presumably we accept the findings of the inquiry and reject your representations? With all due respect, why could you not do that?
Yeah. Like I said, I'm the new one here in the office. I've been since May, but my understanding is you don't normally do that, because the next step is now you're going to apply for the suspension of the judicial officer, and of that the judicial officer is okay. Informed.
With all due respect, I mean administrative justice, okay, would you not say it is self-evident that if you are given the opportunity to make representations for somebody to consider, that a decision is going to be taken, you have the right to get that decision, with all due respect?
So, but the Act does not...
about the Constitution, yes. Not the Act. The Constitution, as you know, with all due respect, is supreme.
I do know that, sir, but the Act does not make provision for that, and on all fairness, I don't see the necessity, because Mr. Ndamase is well aware of what the situation is. It's a matter of formality.
Because she doesn't know how the Commission is going to respond to her representations. You're confusing it with the hearing. And again, with all due respect, I mean, it's basic principles of administrative law, not what is in the Magistrates Act, which came before the Constitution. It's basic principles of administrative law that if you make representations and a decision is taken, you are entitled to the decision and the reasons.
For the record, she was not informed after the session of the Full Magistrates Commission on the 21st of July, when the application for suspension was made. The only information she received was the one on 15 August 2012.
Okay, fair enough. After she wrote the complaint. Let me hear Mr. Mayor, please, Ms. Banimajuk.
Maybe this will be of some of assistance. Ms. Ndamase did write a letter to the Commission on the 19th of July,
she was the Commission's decision was
before the 19th of July, before the Commission to take a decision. And
no, she made her representations, we had that, the 14th of July, etc.
And the Commission considered it on the 21st. Then on the 3rd of July, even before the Commission considered her representation, she was just, she requested the Commission permission to take the matter on review before the Commission could even consider it. So then on the 3rd of July, she was informed that she was at liberty to take any administrative action conducting the proceedings to the High Court. and she was informed that the ethics committee resolved to recommend to the commission that you be removed from office. And she was informed that the matter is to be considered by the commission on the 20th and the 21st of July 2010.
Right, all of that prior to your decision.
Yeah, and then she's also informed decision. In the last line, you'll be informed in writing once the commission has considered the matter.
Yes.
That is the now letter you're talking of, the 15th of August.
That is correct, Chairperson. And I think the Honourable Mr. Jeffries is of the view that should be done much earlier.
Hopefully not too much hangs on it, but I do really resent the patronizing tone that she wasn't entitled to it. I mean, I think it's self-evident that when the commission makes a decision and a report is given to the minister, that simultaneously, that the respondent is, or the accused, whatever you'd call them, is informed as well. And the problem is that it may have been by chance that you happened to write to her the day after you received her letter, but it really looks as though you only gave her reasons once you requested. So I don't think that looks good. I don't think too much hangs on it. The other point, Chair, just briefly, my last point, she says she's on suspension. When was she suspended?
Chairperson, may I respond? No, she's not suspended. You will recall that the Commission and the Minister provisionally suspended her from office, but this was not confirmed by Parliament.
We decided not to confirm.
No, I thought that, but I thought she said...
Well, then she's wrong. Because we chose not to have her suspended.
Yeah, she's now been suspended since the Minister. She's now been suspended. The Minister suspended her. Must suspend her. If there is a recommendation for a removal from office, in terms of the Act, the Minister must, if she's either provisionally suspended, confirm the suspension, or if she's not been suspended, suspend her from office. This was done just prior, and then the Minister had to file this report in Parliament within 14 days.
She was suspended by the Minister on the 8th of August, so when she says, I am on suspension, and the letter of the 14th of August to yourselves, she means since the 8th of August.
Why
do we not get a copy of the letter from the Minister to Mrs. Ndamase? I mean, is that not relevant for us?
Well, that question should be posed to the Minister.
Okay.
Wait. I've got a list of names. Ms. Plana Majake, Prof. Ndabandaba, Ms. Schaefer.
Thank you, Chair. In the manner in which this matter has actually been discussed, it sounds flawed. I guess today in South Africa, with the constitution that we've got, we have to try all means to operate processes that feel fair and just. And for now, we're actually talking about dismissal of a person, and I think because it's a serious matter and it's a labor matter, I think for all intents and purposes, it's very important that somebody be given reasons as to why she's actually been removed from office. If the matter is going to be taken up with other structures, the reasons are there for review. And indeed, I also understand all questions that have been asked by Honourable Jeffries, that somehow it just doesn't sound right to only try to provide reasons to somebody when the person is actually quiet, why the reasons are not given. We are a society in transition. And quite obviously here, there are problems because you mentioned racial slurs, you mentioned attitudes and perceptions. And there's somewhere where you actually indicated that she feels that she's been victimized. I would like to know what the commission is actually doing in terms of looking at issues of transformation, and what you do when somebody has been victimized, so that we are sure that the matter is actually addressed from all directions.
Prof?
Thank you very much. We accept that Ms. Ndamase was not fluent in Afrikaans. But having said that, may no obtain clarity as to whether or not Ms. Ndamase has any smattering of Afrikaans. It's not fluent, but does she have any smattering of Afrikaans? And if she does, or she did, what efforts were taken to improve this matter in Afrikaans.
Ms. Schaefer.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I think we're getting very confused with a number of issues that actually aren't really directly, that have direct bearing on this matter. I mean, the fact of the matter is, I don't believe the process is flawed at all, but I do think that Mr. Jeffrey's point is correct, that when there is another decision made, then the person should be informed, and I would hope that the Commission would take it up for future matters. I mean, she has not been informed. So you can't say she hasn't been informed, she has. But it doesn't look good when she has to ask for reasons. And the minister was told in 26. So, I mean, it's not a disciplinary. It's the fact that representations were made, and then it went to the Ethics Committee, and then it went to the full Commission. So they had to then decide whether they agree with those representations or not. And I do think that there is merit in saying that, that the person who's being investigated should then be told. Even if it is just, yes, we've considered it and we've rejected your representations and accepted the report of the committee. As far as, secondly, I don't think we must let that get in the way of the fact that she's clearly completely and utterly problematic as a judicial officer, and that there's no way, I mean, people have been dismissed as magistrates for far less than what she's been convicted of doing. And transformation is a very high priority on the Magistrates Commission, I can tell you, because I sit on it. It's actually achieved a huge amount, I must say, even since I've been there for about 3 years now. And constantly in the minds of the commissioners, and is constantly being attended to in every possible way. So, I mean, that is not even an issue. Transformation does not mean that you can act in the way Mr. Ndombati has acted, and then go away with it by trying to make allegations of racism. I don't believe that's fair, and I don't believe that is what the commission does. So I think we should just be careful. I think the Magistrates Commission should, in future, make sure that people are informed immediately. New decisions are taken after any representations have been made. I think that is fair, and I think that is correct in terms of the Constitution and administrative justice. But I don't think we should be bogged down in these kind of issues now in this matter.
That's not a reflection of your anger, is it? Because, if I was sitting on that side, I'd be very worried. All right. Mr. Mayor, and then Mr. Pretorius.
President, thank you. May I just respond to the fact, and it's not an excuse, that the letter was not written immediately after the decision of the Commission was made on the 21st of July. But what normally happens is we wait for the Secretary of the Commission to write the minutes, which are then adopted by the chairperson. And once the minutes have been distributed and we get help, then only the parties are informed, or the accused magistrate is informed. But it is usually be done as soon as possible.
I hear you, Mr. Mayor.
We take point on that, Chairperson. We will do that immediately. We do it in all the other matters. I don't know why there was a long delay in this.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, you must admit, we're governed by the Constitution, and in addition to that, there's the provisions of the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, PAJA, which places an obligation on everyone. You can't say, well, we operate in terms of the Magistrates Act and its regulations, and there's nothing there. Of course there's nothing there. That's why we have the Constitution and we have PAJA. Because we knew that in all these statutes, there are huge gaping holes. All right. So the minute the Commission took its decision, we hear about the minutes and the chairperson having to adopt them and the rest of it. But the day you sent the Minister a letter confirming the Commission's decision, the same time a letter should have gone off to Ms. Ndamase, and we wouldn't have had this here. All right? There are other issues. We're fully aware of the stalling and delaying tactics by a lot of the people that appear before you. That's par for the course, something you're just going to have to live with.
Chairperson, now just yes. one comment on Madam Honourable Member. She talks about a labour matter, but magistrates are, in terms of the Constitutional Court and the judgments in Van Rooyen, we are not employees. So the Labour Relations Act is not applicable to magistrates. Magistrates are public office bearers, judicial officers, they're independent and they're regulated by the Magistrates Act as well as the regulations in the Code of Conduct. In principle, some of the basic principles may apply in disciplinary actions and in disciplinary hearings, but they cannot rely on the labor relations actions and disputes.
Hang on. This is Pretorius.
I just want to answer the professor here. He said about the smattering of Afrikaans and what was done to improve it. I just want to reiterate the point that Ms. Ndamazi was at length cross-examined about this issue because she wanted to go to the civil court, and being aware of that stage, it was predominantly more an Afrikaans-orientated setup. That was the version. But her version was there were a lot of black attorneys appearing before who did their papers or documentation in English. Even some of the white attorneys did the documentation in English, and that was also her version. There were freelance interpreters. So it was throughout the spa, it was her version to the presiding officer that Afrikaans was not the issue for her. That was not the drawback for her. And as I've, you know, I mean, I as a white person often in my career had to work in a predominantly black area. Obviously I cannot speak a language. I have to rely on the interpreter to translate, and that didn't stop me from doing the job, for example, like a Setswana person would just. So it boils down to the same thing. But just bear in mind, that was, it split her defense of the matter. Afrikaans was not an issue for her.
Yeah. All right, Ms. Pilar Mjake, and then Mr. Jeffrey.
Just to clarify that my question was actually around the reasons. No matter whether you can call it labor or whatever, if you've got to be dismissed, there's got to be reasons that are clearly articulated, and that's fairness.
Right, Mr. Jeffrey.
I mean, with Mr. Mayer's point, I don't understand what you were trying to say. I mean, if you got it together to write, if the commission, chair of the commission, Judge McCordy has got it together to write to the minister, which is on the 23rd of July, then he can write, somebody can write to the to Mrs. Ndamaze. And then just one other problem, and I mean, if you look at the letter to the minister, it sort of sets out at 7, she was given the opportunity to lodge representations. They were received on 14th of May. The presiding officer in turn forwarded to the commission additional reasons dated 17th of May. And then this is the key point. At its meeting on the 20th and 21st of July, the Magistrates Commission considered the presiding officer's findings and recommendations, as well as the recommendations admitted by Mrs. Ndamaze, and resolved to recommend that she be removed from office, or that the recommendation be accepted. The Commission is of the view that Mrs. Ndamaze's conduct is so serious that it justifies. That's the reason she's looking for. I don't know why that couldn't have been, she couldn't have been informed of that immediately. The other point, though, is, and so these points, the lady I came in late, missed your name?
Ms. Pretorius.
Ms. Pretorius. You know, this point earlier of oh no, well, you know, it's for the presiding officer. I mean, that shows it's not true, it's for the commission. Okay, but look, yeah, you said it was for the presiding officer, but anyway. My other point, though, that's a bit of a worry, there's no mention in the letter to the Minister of the Ethics Committee in terms of the chain.
Committee is a subcommittee. Effectively, they make recommendations to the full commission.
Yeah. I mean, it just would be easier if it's all set out.
Yeah.
You know, so that you have the ethics committee met on the 6th of July, considered the representations, but endorsed the decision of the presiding officer. You know, because it just does, you know, your procedures, I don't know why, after so long, they can't come right.
Right.
No, I didn't get the question.
We're giving the minister a report. Okay, Judge McCordy is giving the minister a report. He talks about 7 and 8, the submissions. Then he goes straight on to 9, to talk about the commission, the Magistrates Commission. My point is that given the Ethics Committee were also involved there, applying their mind, I would have thought that should have been a paragraph as well, procedurally, so that everybody can see what is happening. And then Mrs. Ndamaze gets it too, so it's all open and clear. But the reasons that Mrs. Ndamaze wanted are in 9. And that's all she needed, which hopefully you then gave her. I don't think you've given us a copy of your letter of the 15th, but hopefully you supplied that to her.
The 13th was definitely supplied to her, yes. Okay. Now we'll take heed of Honourable Mr. Jeffries.
Okay.
Comments.
But I think, Chair, in future also, can we get then, I mean, I know it's then from the Minister to the, what do we decide, they are a, they're not a respondent, are they? Well, there would be the respondent, but can you also get a copy of that? I mean, I'm sure and then any further communication that may have taken place in future.
That's from the commission to the particular magistrate.
Well, it wasn't in this case, but in the letter of the 15th, we should have had.
Yeah.
And then I know it's the minister's letter of the 8th. I know it's not your letter, it's the minister's letter, but it would be useful if through his parliamentary office that also gets submitted, because you're coming through the department as well. They get asked to supply us that.
Thank you, Chair. We'll take care of that. Just in this case, there's such voluminous documents. It's really the four archery files, not even boxes of
sure.
Testimony and
evidence. As a magistrate, that's the stuff you deal with.
So,
Mr. Mayor, when we visited the SCA, right by the entrance, by the door, literally, hear me when I say this. You see how tall I am? There was a thing of files, taller than me. They said to us, that is read by one judge. For one case. One judge, one case. You do it all the time. So four voluminous files, maybe. All right.
Thank you.
May I just add, let's not lose sight that the reasons that was set forth in the trial, those reasons remained at all times. Ethics Committee Commission to the Mrs. Say. There was nothing added or taken away. You can just bear that in mind. I hear what you say, sir, and I do agree with you.
Yeah, yeah.
All they have to say is
that's all. Yeah. All right?
If we did apply our minds, we did think about it.
Because we don't want to find ourselves in a situation, which may have happened, where we are questioned in another court about processes. Okay? All right?
So there seems to be the magistrates seem to be scared in the issue of Parliament.
Oh, really?
In the issue of the salary increase. We're taking the president's, they're contesting the president's decision the year before last to...
Which has to do with what?
Awards them only a certain percentage increase and not more as they hoped for.
This is another matter.
They haven't cited Parliament.
Why are you raising it here? We're dealing with Ms. Ndamaze.
No, I'm just saying that they don't, you know, you were saying that we need to be careful because they might take us to court, and I'm just saying the magistrates seem to be scared.
Not them.
No, the magistrates, you know.
Yeah, all right. Okay. No. Don't respond. Don't respond. Okay. All right. Ms. Nurse has given notice. She's going to, where? High Court or Supreme Court of Appeal? She's going to the High Court. All right. I had indicated that we won't be deciding today on these matters. All right. Ours was merely to receive a briefing. All right. Next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next matter is Mr. Chulu. He's an additional magistrate in Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
This is in respect of removal and two reports, removal and withholding of remuneration. With the removal, to give back on Mr. Chulu, he's 53 years of age. He served the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development as a prosecutor from 1991. Prior to his appointment as a magistrate at Seymour in 1994, he was transferred to Malmesbury shortly thereafter. Subsequently, an inquiry into Mr. Chulu's fitness to hold office of magistrate was conducted. Mr. Chulu was found guilty of 4 counts of misconduct. On recommendation of the Magistrates Commission, Mr. Chulu was during 2000 transferred to Cape Town where he could perform his duties under direct supervision. Mr. Chulu was charged with 2 counts of misconduct. He denied the allegations against him. At the conclusion of the misconduct inquiry, he was found guilty of one of the 2 charges, to wit, one of sexual harassment involving a female accused who appeared before him in a pending criminal case at the Cape Town Magistrates Office. The presiding officer at the misconduct inquiry on 17th October 2011 recommended that Mr. Chulu be removed from office. Mr. Chulu elected to conduct his own defense and was only legally represented in respect of sanction. Mr. Chulu's representative made submissions in mitigation, with regard to the imposition of sanction. The presiding officer took into account the fact that Mr. Chula was found guilty of misconduct previously, and that he was severely reprimanded by the then presiding officer. Mr. Chula was at the time found guilty of 4 counts of misconduct, inter alia that he approached a member of the public, an applicant in a domestic violence matter at the Cape Town courthouse, and called her into his office in an attempt to borrow money from her. This resulted in the complainant to be deeply disappointed in the legal system. The other counts were in respect of civil debt. Mr. Chu was given the opportunity to lodge written representations in respect of the recommended sanction with the commission. The representations were received on behalf of Advocate Nell on 10 November 2011. The presiding officer elected not to forward any additional reasons for his recommendation to the commission. Mr. Chula argues that the alternative sanctions set out in the regulations, other than the sanction of removal from office, should have been considered in these circumstances. At its meeting on 25 February 2012, the Executive Committee of the Commission considered the content of the documents and as required, including the presiding officer's findings and recommendation, as well as the representation submitted on Mr. Chula's behalf. It was resolved to support the recommendation of the presiding officer in terms of the regulations that Mr. Chula be removed from office. The commission is of the view that Mr. Chula's conduct set out in the charge of which he was found guilty is so serious that it justifies his removal from office. His conduct renders him unfit to hold the office of magistrate any longer. Once the magistrate's commission has recommended that the magistrate be removed from office on the ground of misconduct, the minister must suspend a magistrate from office. On that basis, the minister suspended Mr. Chula from office. That was on the 13th day of April 2012. That is just the removal from office, Mr. Chair. I don't know if you want me to proceed at this stage then with the withholding of remuneration at the same time.
Yes, please.
Okay. Having considered the commission recommendation as contained in a letter of 29 February 2012 to suspend Mr. Chula from office, the minister on 29 March 2012 suspended Mr. Chula from office and tabled a report in this regard in Parliament. Mr. Chula's legal representative was invited to show cause why the Commission should not determine to withhold his remuneration. And having considered Mr. Chula's representations submitted by LaRue attorneys on his behalf, the Commission determined to withhold Mr. Chula's remuneration in terms of the Act. The Commission is of the view that the withholding of Mr. Chula's remuneration, pending the consideration by Parliament of a recommendation by the Magistrates Commission for his removal from office, is justified. There seems to be no reason why a magistrate on suspension or provisional suspension for that matter, who is not fit to hold office, is being removed from office for that reason, should be paid for the period during which he is suspended prior to his removal. That was then signed by the minister on the 30th of July 2012.
Okay. Honourable members. What Mr. Lowe hasn't informed me of is that Mr. Chula plans to approach the High Court for relief if he is not accommodated. It's just by way of additional information. Were all the steps followed, Mr. Lowe?
Yeah, the matter that Mr. Jules mentioned earlier about the Commission's decision given directly to him, that is something that we will look into.
And, yeah, Jefferson, may I just add that his attorney was immediately informed by way of the facts of the Commission's resolution.
Immediately?
Yes, I think it is there.
All right. As long as he was informed.
Okay. Honourable members? Nothing? Wow. Okay. Chief Brown. Next.
Thank you, Chair. Then the last matter will be Ms. Miles. Chairperson, this is the first time I think there's a recommendation from the Commission for the removal from office on account of continued ill health. If you can see the file, this is quite a lengthy process. There was a lot of correspondence dating back from 2010 already. But on 17 March 2010, the Ethics Committee of the Commission considered a report, it's actually a complaint from the Acting Chief Magistrate Kimberley regarding Ms. Miles' continued ill health. And the Ethics Committee resolved to conduct an investigation in terms of Regulation 29 into removal from office on account of continued ill health. She was informed accordingly. In terms of the regulation, was requested to submit a medical report from a practitioner of her choice. The report submitted by Ms. Miles, together with the reports compiled by herself, was submitted by the Department of Justice to Proactive Health Solutions. That's a firm which a service provider actually, which the government appoints an assistance to the Commission to evaluate and advise on ill health, retirement, and medical reports for experts' opinion. PHS gave a feedback report which was considered by the Ethics Committee on the 1st of December. It was noted that the medical reports indicated her mental status had been severely compromised as a result of a major depressive episode since April 2009. Her working environment has contributed significantly to her condition as well as other social stresses. She was inter alia not able to work with the head of office, Mr. Ganyaru, but they are either settled that matter amicably. However, she was found to be fit enough to continue with her work, but because of her previous medical history, PHS recommended that she should, where possible, be accommodated in terms of possible reduced workload and less stressful cases, and that the employer be empathetic and supportive towards Ms. Miles. It was further recommended that she should continue with regular psychotherapy from a clinical psychologist and regular consultations with a psychiatrist. Now, her attendance record showed that she had been absent from duty for long periods. Since November 2004, she was absent from office on sick leave with full pay for 460 days and 141 days on sick leave with half pay. Now, after considering the medical reports and all the other relevant information, the Ethics Committee formed the opinion that she doesn't have the capacity to carry out her duties of office in an efficient manner and informed her accordingly. The medical reports were submitted to her. She was informed that she may make representations within 10 days addressed to the chairperson of the commission, which she did on the 9th of January and on the 26th of December. Her written comments were considered. The 9th of January it was received, and those comments were dated the 26th of December. She contends that the sick leave is not unreasonable, as it was covered by medical certificate for every period. She submits that she never requested to be accommodated with a reduced workload, and that her history of work performance shows that she is capable of producing longer court hours than she can dispose of more matters than her colleagues. In her view, she has the capacity to deal with a normal workload. She feels that other magistrates who are charged with crimes received better treatment than she did, and submits that the inquiry into her capacity to carry out her duties of office is not substantively and procedurally fair. With regard to the allegations that magistrates who are charged with crimes receive better treatment, that is not true, Chairperson. There was a magistrate there, Mr. Weitz. This matter was also before the committee. He was charged and he was also removed from office. The Ethics Committee on the 16th of February considered her comments and held a view that there was a fair review of Ms. Miles' capacity to carry out the duties of office in an efficient manner. She was given the opportunity to submit to the chairperson written comments. She is still on sick leave and it is not clear when she will return to work. That was at the stage when the committee on 16th of February 2012 considered the matter. The matter was referred to the Executive Committee of the full commission. the executive committee was of the view that the expert opinion presented by PHS does not support Ms. Miles' removal from office. The experts suggested that she should continue with her occupation, however with some accommodation where possible, such as reducing her workload and exposing her to less stressful cases, while she continues with her regular consultations with the psychiatrist. Now, the commission had to ask itself whether it would be possible to accommodate her in a manner in view of her sick leave history and the extent to which she has already been accommodated by means of sick and vacation leave. And the committee, that's the executive committee of the commission, resolved to approach the cluster head, the chief magistrate of Kimberley, for him to report to the commission regarding the nature of her judicial work, which Ms. Miles is required to perform when she is at the office, and his opinion regarding the quality of her judicial work when she has been at the office, and the impact which her long period of sick leave has had on service delivery at the office and within the subcluster, and any other relevant information. Chairperson, he was also requested to indicate whether it would be possible for her to allocate judicial work for a period which would be less stressful whilst she continues with regular psychotherapy from a clinical psychiatrist. We did receive a response from the cluster head after he consulted with the head of office, the acting senior magistrate at Appington, where she stations, in regard to the matters raised by the commission. And he indicated that the heavy workload at Appington Court requires dedicated, versatile and hard-working magistrates who are able to assist across all divisions, that's criminal, civil, quasi-judicial, court work, on a daily basis. Therefore, there is no less stressful court and or environment at Appington Court to accommodate Ms. Miles. In his view, continued absence of Ms. Miles is compromising quality, effective and efficient service delivery. And he supported the removal from office of Ms. Miles. The acting senior magistrate Appington, the head of office, judicial head of office, indicated that Ms. Miles, if she would return back to the office, and she would then be allocated to Court C, which is the China Generalization Court at Appington, she will then be required to deal mainly with the postponement of cases to other courts and to deal with bail applications, which may vary between 4 to 5 applications per day. The number of outstanding cases in the court rolls at Uppington is very high. At the end of February, it was 1,211 outstanding cases on 5 criminal courts. That's well above the limits. Due to the high court rolls and the history of absence, he is of the view that he cannot be afforded to risk cases not being finalized due to absence. He also indicated that in the past, Ms. Miles was assigned to every criminal court in the office, including Court C, but was unable to cope with the workload. She was also allocated to the civil court, but also didn't cope. With regards to the quality of her work, he says it cannot be argued that her work is not of poor quality. Her continued absence, however, has severely impacted on the morale of the colleagues, because invariably her workload has shared by all the other colleagues, resulting in them not being able to attend to the uncalls optimally. And this creates a situation where the public and the stakeholders are losing trust in the judicial system at Uppington. On the 18th of July 2012, Ms. Miles has still not returned to work. In fact, as a matter of fact, as we speak, she is not at work at the moment, and this was since the 31st of December 2011, she failed to submit any medical certificates to cover her absence from the office, despite various requests to file same. The matter was then presented to full commission at its meeting on the 21st of July. All the documents were submitted to the commission, and the commission formed the opinion that Ms. Miles should be removed from office due to continued ill health. She is still absent and fails to submit any medical certificates in support of her, to support her absenteeism. It has a detrimental impact on the service delivery and administration of justice, and it cannot be longer justified. She is not fit to hold the office of magistrate any longer. And the commission therefore recommended that she be removed from office, and minister suspended her in terms of the acts, Chairperson.
What exactly is wrong with her? Nothing here tells us that. Is it then?
It's major depressive disorders and post-traumatic stress and she mentioned various family reasons. Her mother passed away, and her brother had this, and her sister had that, and her house was burned down, and it's a lot of issues. But you can see she's not well.
Okay. Proactive health solutions, I'm told, made certain recommendations. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And those weren't considered?
They were considered.
They were?
They were considered, and because they recommended that she be given less stressful work.
Mm-hmm.
And the cluster head, that would be the chief magistrate of the province, Mr. Killing at Kimberley, was specifically asked to address those questions and those concerns by PHS. And he says, but can I give her less stressful work? She's a magistrate, she has to cope with all the work.
No. All right, Mr. Jeffrey. And Mr. Feline, about that.
Yeah, I mean, my problem is that, I mean, you can, what are the consequences of removal from office on the account of ill health?
Legal consequences.
I mean, in terms of salary, pension, that kind of stuff.
Chairperson's like a resignation. She's removed from office.
And what do they need to get for medical boarding?
Jefferson, in terms of, this procedure was followed in terms of Regulation 29, where the Commission initiates an investigation into continuity health. She was on numerous occasions, and myself and Mr. Lowe also asked her, why does she not approach the Minister to be medically boarded?
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't see herself as in that position. She seems, well, she's still of the view she's fit to hold office and she's fit to perform a work, but she's not at work, she's not coming. And there's every time there's an excuse or an SMS which prevents her from coming to the office. But if she had to apply the route followed or prescribed in Regulation 30, she can approach the Minister in terms of Section 13 of the Act to vacate office on continued ill health. And then that would be regarded as a boarding.
What happens if she were to walk out in the street and get run over by a bus and become mentally disabled? She presumably would not be able to apply in terms of Regulation 30. How would she then be ordered?
Maybe such an application can be made on her behalf by a family member?
See, what I don't understand is that, you know, one of the features of depression is that people can't do anything, don't have any motivation, don't want to get up in the morning. Okay? Which to some extent may explain why there's no responses, why there's no medical certificates. The Magistrates Commission doesn't seem to be being particularly human in this regard. I mean, I see there's quite a lot of detail. There's also a point chair where she was on medication. I mean, you can treat depression with medication, but it has other side effects. But then she stopped taking the medication because she felt it she wasn't feeling sharp enough. But I just don't know, you know, in a sense, a person who's suffering from severe depression is a bit like somebody who's brain damaged and not able to do it themselves. I would have thought there should be some other provision for the department to apply for somebody to be boarded. Why should it be up to the family? So, you know, one of you goes out and gets run over by a bus and gets severely brain damaged. Must it really be up to your family to apply for you? You know, isn't it self-evident? And so it's the same, my concern is the same in this aspect. I mean, you know, yes, she should have done more herself, but that's actually one of the features of depression.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't seem as though you've been particularly human about the whole thing.
Who's going to respond, Mr. Mayor?
I will try to get this in.
I think Flores is keen to do so.
Okay.
No comment. No, but I understand what you're saying, sir, but bear in mind, this lady's not prepared to acknowledge, let's call it, she had a problem, and that's the situation we sit in. And the other option is regulation 30, but it must be initiated from her. But in this particular case, she doesn't want to admit she has a medical problem to the extent that it's impacting on her work production. And even though it's a governmental department, it's still economic unit it has to produce. And I mean, our clients are the community, so who's suffering ultimately if a magistrate is not putting his or her weight? It's the community. So this is the catch-22 situation you sit with. She doesn't want to be at work or cannot be at work due to the situation, but she also doesn't want to admit she has a problem. So if she doesn't want to admit she has a problem, you cannot follow regulation 30 where she can apply to be medically boarded. So she wants to read now buttered on both sides. She wants to hide about a medical condition, but in one brief wants to say it's not such a problem, but she's not doing the work. If that maybe answers your question.
All right, what is thinking? Ms. Pilar Majake, followed by Ms. Schaefer.
Thank you, Chair. I think what is a bit difficult here is really indeed to determine the mental state of the magistrate. But at the same time, when one looks at this, one realizes that the plus ahead was of the opinion that the magistrate be removed. And then the ATCD magistrate was very sympathetic and went along with the PHS recommendation. But at the same time, even when she was actually afforded this opportunity, she stopped coming to work from December 2012. And one other thing is, when one tries to determine her mental state, if you look at the reasons that she provided on the communication of 9th January, herself, she feels that her sick leave is not unreasonable. And this sick leave is very long. There are some ways written 460 days plus another 141 days. It's too many long leave days. The problem here is that herself, she's not actually acknowledging the problem. And I think that in itself is very problematic, because if she was acknowledging the problem, this is where it could be possible for the Magistrates Commission probably to actually help come up with a solution. So I think it's quite difficult in the sense that she's been away. And on page 6 it says that the Commission is of the opinion that Ms. Miles should be removed from office due to continued ill health. I think the continued absence, if there has not been any medical certificates from the 31st of December 2011, because that ill health needs to be supported by documentation for it to be regarded as ill health. So she has been absent. But indeed, I do acknowledge the fact that she might be in a situation that is disabling due to the fact that we do all understand how depression works on people. Thank you.
Ms. Schaefer.
No, Chair, I don't think there's any doubt that she can't work. I mean, it's quite clear she's taken a huge amount of leave, but I do also agree that if there's any way she can rather be boarded, then that should be looked at. But I mean, how we go about that, I don't know. I mean, it is a fact of depression that people don't have the will or the ability to be able to do what they need to do. So how do you accommodate that? I mean, she probably just can't go to the doctor and get a certificate. So, I mean, is there no way that the department can do it on her behalf? Is there any way that we could go back to her, the commission could go back to her and say that this matters before Parliament, that the Parliament is of the view that you can't continue? It is clear to everybody that you aren't able to do it. This is your only other option to apply into the Section 30. Otherwise, you will lose your job. Is that possible? Is it viable? No, but it's true. She can't work. There's no doubt about it on the basis of the evidence that she's not in a position to work, and it isn't fair on the litigants or the other colleagues who have to carry the workload. But it does seem to be, if she really is sick as she appears to be, then it does seem to be a bit difficult to make her do something which she isn't able to do.
Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, well, actually, myself and Mr. Lowe had a discussion with her, and Ms. Krilling and one of her senior managers also had a discussion with her, trying to convince her to rather follow the route and requesting the minister to be boarded. But according to herself, she is fit and proper. She does. She wants to come to work, but she doesn't. If I can just read from the Chief Magistrate Kimberley, just a few SMSs which he sends. So number now is wakker geskrik. That's on 11:28 on the morning. It's 11:30. Wag, het vroeg aan gaan slaap, niks werk, maar ga voorbij dieren, gebruik mensen van Zim. Ga net bord hier verhek, en iemand hier laat blij. Nog jammer, nogmaals jammer voor mijn problemen. En on the 8th of June, hoofdlanders maat is ter flauw geraakt van migraine. So it's not only depression, it's got migraine. It's stress by her. Ons kan nu eerst na 5 die dokter zien. On the 13th, the chief received an SMS 821, stating, more cry, more. Krijg niet van meneer Morlong niet, het celnummer zal hem alsjeblieft laten weten. Ik kom in vooral voor DV net later na 11. Meer proppen in. Denk net de spanning voor werk. Baie dank, Miles. Veel days later, DV-zaak pas afgehandeld, onschuldig na staatszaak hervat. CEO of Miles. Meer aarde gebrand vandaag, zoals ze morgen weer terug is. Dat zijn dan die depression iets. Then a mum slips, then she had to take her to the doctor. Then there's a problem with a daughter, then there's a problem with a brother. It is all external factors also, which she attracts to her own, which to make her really unable to work. I mean, if she really is in a condition to work, why is she not at work? She's not even submit medical certificate now. She's receiving a full salary.
Oh.
And really, we have tried to. And she even held it against us that we visited her personally at her home, trying to convince her to please follow the route, ask the commission, ask the minister to vacate your offer, then you can get an extra 5 miles pensionable service. But she hasn't got 10 years services yet because she was medically boarded before, apparently.
She held it against you that you visited her at home?
That's right, yeah,
basically. Yeah. Prof?
Yeah, Chair, although I studied psychopathology many, many years ago, I feel that like most disorientated and depressed people, she cannot have insight into her conditions, doesn't understand us. Therefore, the only person who can tell us what to do is a psychotherapist. He can recommend some deputy even to go there. That's what I remember, 20 years ago, things might have changed.
Mr. Jeffrey?
If you look at Regulation 29, there's this requirement for this report. Which the person has the opportunity to respond to. The report then that you got in terms of Regulation 29 was the one from PHS. But that did not recommend removal due to ill health. Isn't that a problem?
That's correct, Chairperson. They did not recommend. They said they recommended or suggested that she be given a less stressful workload,
mm-hmm.
less stressful cases.
Right.
And then the commission on that response requested the Chief Magistrate of Kimberley to respond to that, whether it would be suitable or feasible in the circumstances. So he said that the APEC said there's no way that we can give a magistrate less stressful work to do. You cannot just admit the sign admissions of guilt or do a few inquests. That she has done already. I mean, the senior magistrate of Abington said she's been doing all the courts, but she was not performing.
No, that's fine, but it didn't say, they said that was preference. Okay. Just trying to find the report. Surely you have to have a report that basically says the person is not fit to work, and you don't have that.
Is there a report from an expert saying that she's not fit to work? No?
If I read the last report dated the 9th of September from PHS, um, They say she's currently not taking any psychiatric medication since January 2010, and she's not had any contact with a psychiatrist. She did not display any physical impairments, psychological impairments. That's from PHS, Jefferson.
Oh, I see.
That's the independent. She was requested to submit reports from her own physician, a psychiatrist, and then thereafter the commission requested PHS to have an independent evaluation and assessment. And she was adamant that she did not suffer from any depression and was motivated to remain working. Now, according to Ms. George, Ms. Miles was able to remain in her own occupation as she met the physical and psychological demands of the occupation. But she must continue with psychotherapy, but she didn't take her medication. She was then referred to Dr. Westmore, and a psychiatrist from an independent evaluation. She did not present with any abnormal cognitive functions. Her cognitive and cognitive skills are normal. She didn't display any signs of intoxication or withdrawal, and her mood was euthymic. She has major depressive disorder, which is currently in remission. Previous diagnosis of bipolar mood disorder. She's got hypertension. Her work situation is a problem. Finances, caring for a mother who in the meantime passed away. Being a single parent, the death of brothers. Dr. Westman was of the opinion that Ms. Mark's working environment has contributed significantly to her condition, as well as other social stresses. However, having said that, Dr. Westman was of the opinion that Ms. Mark is fit enough to continue with her work, however, because of her previous medical history, she should possibly be accommodated in less stressful circumstances. Just person, that was the commission's problem, that she doesn't take the medication, and you cannot give her less stressful work to allocate to her.
Not in Upington.
Well, not in Upington, not maybe in any airport.
Okay. All right, Mr. Jeffrey.
My problem is the PHS report is the expert is Dr. Westmore was of the opinion that Ms. Miles was fit enough to continue with her work. However, because of previous medical history, she should, where possible, be accommodated. So it wasn't fit enough to continue work, and therefore she must be. It is fit enough to continue work, but try and get her accommodated, where possible. So have you got the reports? I would say Regulation 29 envisages a medical report which says the person is not fit for work. You don't have that.
No, not in that sense. Just that she must be allocated less stressful work.
Not where possible.
Well, where possible, yeah.
And the big difference. Because it's not a condition that can't be in it. It's not a condition.
They also recommend to the employer that they be empathetic and supportive by providing continuous support or counseling. And they further recommended that Ms. Miles continues with regular psychotherapy for a clinical psychologist and regular consultation with a psychiatrist, but she doesn't comply with that recommendation.
So I think the issue is really, you clearly have tried to assist her, but the issue is if the medical report doesn't back up the fact that she can't work on the grounds of medical, would it not be a proper procedure that she then be, dealt with in terms of the normal not doing her job provisions? That's the issue. Because she clearly, if she says, if it says she's fine, she can actually work, and she doesn't. I think the only issue really is then, is the correct procedure, or should the other one have been followed?
I think maybe we can look at Regulation 27. That might be a way to get it in through the back door. It goes into incapacity. It doesn't stipulate any specific incapacity. So what we have here, we have a semi-ill person, but also a person who doesn't come to work. So that might be a an alternative as the lady suggested, instead of going, because it's not really misconduct, but I would suggest looking in at Regulation 27, because I do agree, if you look strictly at the wording of Regulation 29, there must be a medical report which says you are medically unfit, and we don't have it yet. But I mean, she's incapacitated, but what will help us here is Regulation 27 doesn't stipulate what kind of capacity. It's a very wide regulation.
Then how does it affect the report before us? No, that's not great.
Mr. Mayor?
Jefferson, just to respond to my colleague, actually the end result would be exactly the same. She's going to be removed from office due to incapacity, and it's still a removal. The end result is exactly the same financially. The only option would be for this committee is then not to adopt a report, refer it back to the committee, to the commission, and that we have another consultation with her and trying to convince her that she should rather approach the minister in terms of Regulation 30, read with Section 13.5 of the Act, to have her released or vacated from office on continued ill health or any other reason, for that matter.
I mean, what is the implications on the process? If this is not the correct process because you have got a medical report to back it up, how would it affect your process now? Because, I mean, it's clearly been going on a long time, and I don't think it's fair to keep going on and on and on. I mean, it's not fair to the other magistrates or the litigants. How quickly would you have to redo the process? If so, how quickly could it be done? Or could you just read the report in terms of a different section based on the same evidence?
Sorry, there's a specific procedure you will have to follow as well. You'll have to follow due protocol. Obviously, you've got a lot of evidence already on to assist. It will go quicker than it would normally take. But if I can also just mention, you have to be careful. If we suggest to a magistrate that you should follow Regulation 30 to have yourself medically boarded, mm-hmm. we can end up in a situation where it is being done, and at the end of the day, the department gets sued for a form of constructive dismissal. Even the instances where there was misconduct and the situation was rather go to the resignation route instead of just losing your job, and that person turns back and makes a case in the High Court for constructive dismissal. So I'm personally very wary of making suggestions to a magistrate. It can come back and bite us in the back.
Pilana Majaki, did you want something?
Yes, sir. Maybe just to say that indeed if you've got to be sympathetic, we have to follow Section 30.
Regulation 30,
yes, of actually having her medically removed. But I do understand the sentiment that maybe we shouldn't actually push her too hard, lest the department be sued for constructive dismissal. But maybe it need not be done in writing, just verbally, as a way of trying to actually facilitate this so that it actually works out, because from the records that we are actually having in front of us, this has been going on for quite a long time. And I guess that the agency is there, it's actually frustrating the processes of courts in Abidjan. Because there's a vacancy there that's actually not productive. And that in itself is a problem. So we need to actually be in the position to deal with this as swiftly as possible so that even the work within the Abidjan Magistrates Court can actually manage the flow. My major worry is that in the midst of all of this, because she's not like drained mentally from the emails that are being sent, from the kind of responses that she's actually given, my worry is when she stops coming to work over a long period of time without really trying to give a reason. And I do understand it could be coming from depression, but if she's in the position to write emails, at least she should be writing emails. So one actually wonders what exactly is a problem. And probably maybe when you go for another assessment, it might actually help. The psychiatric report indicates that she's not taking any medication. Has she been on psychiatric treatment before? Psychiatric treatment, which means she has been on psychiatric drugs before. So probably what it means is that she needs to be reassessed again. And whoever is reassessing her should actually be given reasons, whichever professional is going to reassess her, should be given reasons why she's being reassessed. Because sometimes if you don't actually indicate to the other professional as to what the problem is, they may still come up with recommendations like the lighter work, which is not actually helping, because already we've been through that and it has not helped. But if it's actually indicated that the assessment is actually done with a view to looking into medical boarding of the magistrate, should she agree, of course. Maybe in that sense, we might be in the position to get a report that would actually help that kind of an exit.
Mr. Jeffrey?
Yeah.
I mean, my first problem is that if we have to, as Parliament or as the National Assembly component, be sure that the correct procedures are being followed. And so my one concern, first concern, is Regulation 29 the correct provision? Because Regulation 29 doesn't expressly say it, but it impliedly raises that the medical, the implication is the medical report should recommend removal due to ill health. And if there is another section that is similar that could have been used, then I think that weakens the case even more.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, that I think is what that 27. In which case, you know, then it would have to be redone to be compliant, because we don't want a situation where she challenges it and then succeeds on the basis that the wrong section was applied. So that's one. Number two is I really would like the commission to check, or the members of the delegation from the commission to check. I mean, surely the must boarding should not require the person to apply, or their family. I mean, as I said, what happens if you have a brain damaged person who doesn't have family? Then what do you do with them? You know, so they're mentally disabled, incapable. Because they've been brain damaged, had a stroke or whatever. What happens, I mean, this must be possible and must probably be happening with some of the magistrates. Alzheimer's, you know, it's slow disease. People don't want to recognize that they've got it. It's a terrible admission to have to make. And you could have magistrates getting Alzheimer's who should be not removed due to ill health, because it's not their fault, but should be boarded so that they can get their benefits. But you do it for them.
Even if it's against their will?
You know, even if it's against their will, I would have thought. So isn't there something like that? Because it doesn't seem right, and particularly in the Alzheimer's context, which affects older people. And so it would be, one, I think you follow the wrong procedure, but two, I accept the point of you can't go and suggest, I accept the point of you can't go and suggest to her that she should apply for boarding. And then particularly with a depressive patient, they can't often, I see she's also somewhere in one of the reports that she's actually bipolar, but it's in remission. So maybe it's come out in this past year by you've been receiving nothing. But I agree you can't go to yourselves, but you can find some other way of trying to get somebody to speak to her. But surely there's a way of doing it yourselves.
Mr. Mayor. Chairperson, I think Regulation 29 was specifically enacted just to make provision for boarding. That is when the commission may order that an investigation be held regarding the removal from office due to continued ill health.
But yet the effect is the same as a dismissal.
The effect is removal from office, like an incapacity. That's true.
With
that's
the same
true.
Benefits or lack of benefits as a dismissal.
It boils down as a resignation. Yes, that's the same
thing. You can, what if some of these other magistrates done, or your friend Mrs. Ndamase, you know, you can do a whole lot of things and you get dismissed, which are your subjective, what you've done. But you can then be subject to an illness that you've got no control over. And it's the same as if you stole, like if you went and murdered somebody in the courtroom. That doesn't sound right.
Yeah, I think one should take that up, maybe, Chairperson.
Mm.
The department is requesting that full benefits will be paid with removal, when removal is eventually being passed through, and she is being removed from office, that she gets her full benefits as if she was to retire. I think there's a case to be made out in that regard.
I mean, maybe to wrap the thing up, I think the department or the commission maybe consult with the state or advisors should get an opinion as to whether you follow the correct procedure. If the opinion is that you have, then fine. We'll go with that.
Mm.
Stable advisors,
yeah.
Whatever. But get an opinion.
Just to be on the safe side.
On this matter.
Should you have followed, can you do it in other sufficient grounds in terms of 29? 29 doesn't expressly say in the report to recommend it, but that's its implication. But please do that to cover yourselves.
Yeah.
If that's the case, and then advise us on where we can recommend in adopting the report that this removal should be with benefits associated with board it. Is the minister able to do that? If there's a recommendation from Parliament.
Chairperson, we will get back to the Commission, obtain a legal opinion,
and
say Lord Advisors, and then get back to do
it. It doesn't have to be
state Lord Advisors, but just stay a reliable legal opinion.
Yeah.
State Lord Advisors is fine, but if you want to get silk or you know, it's well, it's going to help you. It's basically what we want to avoid is the cost you have to pay defending the matter because you are losing it.
All right.
I think that would be the agenda, Chairperson.
Yes, that would be. And we've missed the memorial service. But well, we won't. Sorry? No, it's at 12. Yeah. All right, Mr. Mayor, Ms. Pretorius, Mr. Lowe, thank you very much. We will still have to decide on the Tiulu matter and the... That's it. Well, don't want to say we...
Yeah.